I had this feeling of being the chosen one. I think anyone would have felt this way, if placed in the same position. But those feelings of superiority faded over time. Mainly because there wasn't anyone I could share this part of my life with. I saw Captain White about a week before my lint classes were to end. He showed up at the PPD classroom about the time I always left for the night. He congratulated me on doing as well as I had and came to wish me good luck in the future. The visit was also to let me know that my PPD courses had come to an end. I had been practicing for the last few weeks and he said it was time to wrap it up. During this last meeting he also told me what to expect next. I was never to talk to anyone about this program unless the person was introduced to me by Captain White as a third-party introduction. This is how Level 1 personnel kept control of the program. They had to introduce lower echelon personnel to someone before they could discuss anything. He told me I would be getting orders to go somewhere soon. He didn't tell me where, but that was okay by me because I was ready to leave my current assignment and use my new abilities. That last meeting with Captain White was unceremoniously short. He exited the room through the door next to my workstation that I had never seen anyone use and which had blended into my surroundings until now. I took a closer look at it. It looked like it was part of the wall, but upon closer inspection I noticed it had a recessed door latch and the door slid open, disappearing into the wall behind my workstation, instead of opening in or out like normal doors. I left the room for the last time and climbed into the van waiting for me upstairs. The drive home was uneventful. I was hoping to get a glimpse of my van driver this time, but he would always drive off immediately after I shut the door. I didn't care anymore. I had stopped trying to find things out. It took too much energy and wasn't worth my time. The van drove off and I never saw the blue van or its mysterious driver ever again. I went up to my hotel room that night wondering where life was going to lead me now, especially since I was no longer in control of it. The captain never once mentioned the white van incident. I was relieved by that. Prelude to Cum's getting back to normal life was difficult. Everything paled in comparison to this new world that had opened up in front of me. Since my third or fourth week of PPD school I had been dreaming intuitively. It was the strangest kind of dreaming you could imagine. In these dreams, my subconscious would create a traditional dream where things would unfold in a typical disjointed dream-like sequence, then mix it with my intuitive abilities which would be grounded and very reality-based. The ick part of my dreams would be strangely realistic. I would wake up thinking I had just experienced what I was dreaming of. The dreams were so realistic that I was constantly questioning whether I was actually awake while I was, indeed, awake. The dreams subsided once I got back to my home base and started my regular job up again. I was glad because I started to question whether I was dreaming during the course of a regular day. As you can imagine, it was disconcerting at best, frightening at worst. Things didn't slow down much. Only a few months after I returned from my school at NSA, I received relocation orders. I knew these orders would take me to my first PPD-related assignment. I wasn't disappointed. I was ready for a change. As I prepared for the move to another base, it occurred to me that things had been happening in my career up to this moment that all of a sudden made sense. For instance, when I came into the USAF in 1982, I enlisted originally as a security policeman. While I was stationed in Korea, in 1984-1985, I met a man who was in the electronic intelligence career field. He spoke so highly of it, he convinced me that it was the field to be in. I always remembered something he said to me. He told me that I needed to put in for a cross-train to be an ELINT specialist because my life would change forever. Well, I absolutely hated being in the security police field, so several years later when I was eligible to apply for cross-training into another career field, I applied. I made it well known that if I wasn't approved for cross-training into the electronic intelligence career field, I was going to get out of the Air Force altogether. At the time, approvals for cross-training had been denied left and right. As a matter of fact, Cross-training was closed off to the security police career field just days after I turned in my paperwork. Everyone told me that my chances of receiving approval would be close to nil. About a month later, my paperwork came back approved and I had a school date in February of 1990. Everyone was astonished and teased me that I must have known someone to get the approval through. Knowing what I know now, I have absolutely no doubt that it was part of their master plan for me. My friend in Korea had planted the seed and I followed through with it. I still wonder what they would have done if I hadn't applied for the cross-training and proceeded to get out. So I re-enlisted to give this new job a try. I went off to technical training in San Angelo, Texas. After technical school I was sent to OTTFB, in Nebraska. While stationed there, as my most recent four-year enlistment drew to a close, I made it known once again that I was going to get out. I had told my coworkers that the only way I would entertain thoughts of re-enlisting was if I received orders to Korea. I had already been stationed in Korea twice and I desperately wanted to go back. A month later, I had orders to Korea. At the time, I just looked at it as good fortune. Of course, I know now, there was probably a more involved process going on. I never made it to Korea though, because it was only 3 or 4 months later that I received orders to attend DA-280 at Fort Meade, NSA. While I was going through PPD and Dilint school, I was told that my orders to Korea had been cancelled. Meanwhile, I had already re-enlisted for another 6 years. I re-enlisted for a full 6 years because I was entitled to a larger bonus than if I had re-enlisted for 4 years. I was a bit upset by this new turn of events, but I had PPD on my mind at the time. I knew I would most likely be going somewhere else soon anyway. I see now that there was a lengthy history of people somewhere pulling the strings of my career without me ever realizing it. Amazing when I look back on it. PPD Base Number 1, my new operations officer and first sergeant met me at the airport. It was a long flight with a tedious layover, but I was finally at my new base. I arrived at night, so the drive to the base from the airport was very unfamiliar. Foremost on my mind was the third-party introduction. I was perplexed as to how Captain White was going to notify me of my next PPD contact when he was thousands of miles away. I was there almost a full month before my clearances arrived. During this time, I was driving myself crazy trying to second guess what might happen next. After my clearances arrived, I went through the necessary briefings and other things that were necessary for me to start my regular job. Still no introductions. I started to wonder if this was actually the place I would begin my PPD duties when the introduction finally came. I was awakened from sleep in my dorm room by someone banging on my door. It was one of the other dorm residents. After establishing who I was, he told me there was someone on the phone for me. Our doors opened out onto an outdoor balcony, so I walked around the balcony to the phone in the hallway on the other side of the dorm to answer my call. On my way to the phone, I was trying to figure out who would be calling me, since I didn't know anyone on base yet and no one from back home knew how to call me at the dorm. I had concluded that it would probably be someone from my new work center when I picked up the phone. It was Captain White. I wasn't able to hide my surprise very well. I had just recently convinced myself that I would, most likely, not be doing any PPD work here. In our brief conversation, Captain White told me to expect someone from my new unit to approach me regarding the program, as he referred to it in our conversation. I was waiting for him to tell me the code word that I would need to listen for in order to identify my new PPD contact or some other mysterious type of identifying remark. He told me that I would receive a call at this same phone after we ended our conversation and I was to stay at the phone to answer it. This person would not be identifying himself on the phone, but will tell me where and when to meet him. That was it. After the captain hung up, I waited by the phone for my next call. It came about 30 seconds later. The ring startled me. I quickly picked up the receiver and said, "Hello." I was asked if I was Sergeant Sherman. After I replied that I indeed was, he said to meet him at the gate to the site in 30 minutes. He would be standing in front of the gate with his arms crossed waiting for me. He hung up. Manners surely aren't mandatory in this program, I thought to myself as I walked back to my room. The site he was referring to was where my new unit was located. I was assigned to a unit that conducted all their operations within a fenced-off compound, with its own security personnel and security cameras. It had one security gate everyone entered and exited the compound through, manned by security personnel. I quickly changed clothes, putting on my uniform, not knowing the appropriate dress for the occasion. I didn't want to take the chance of doing something I wasn't supposed to do. The site was only a 3 or 4 minute bike ride from my dorm room. As I was approaching, I could see my new PPD contact standing in front of the gate to the site. I had already been introduced to this person. When I met him for the first time, almost a month prior, I had suspected that he may be my new PPD commander. I was expecting a captain, and now my expectations were met. I dismounted from my bike and parked it near the fence. My new PPD contact introduced himself. It was Captain Stanley, the site operations officer. He was one of the two unit personnel who picked me up at the airport almost a month earlier. After we had our identification checked and our security badges swapped out for our on-site security badges, Captain Stanley led me through the gate and down the sidewalk towards the operations building. I knew little of what lay ahead, but I was certainly excited at the prospect of finding out. The captain led me into the operations building, which I had already been in a few days earlier when my security clearances finally arrived. We walked back to the conference room, which was nestled in the back of the small, main operations office. As we walked through the main operations office, I could see filing cabinet-type safes lining almost every wall. All had magnetic signs hanging on the front of them signifying whether the safe was open or closed. Each filing cabinet had a built-in dial lock like the type normally found on a heavy-duty safe. In essence, the desks what these were, only in drawer form so as to allow for easy organization and storage of classified materials. I sat in the conference room with another new person to the unit. It was Don Thomas, a friend with whom I was stationed at my last base. He and I had received orders to this new base at the same time. I wondered why he was here, because I thought I would be receiving my PPD briefing. It was obvious the briefing would have to wait. I had no idea if Don, or anyone else, was part of PPD. At the time, there was no question in my mind that I was the only capable person on site. Of course, this was only an egotistical assumption on my part. Later, I found I was the only one, but I shouldn't have been so sure at the time. Captain Stanley excused himself and went back into the operations office and closed the door behind him. Don and I looked around the room as we waited. The room was normal looking in every sense. I am not sure what I was expecting, but I looked around the room for anything out of the ordinary. There were several posters hanging on the wall, all with an Air Force theme. Amidst all the posters there hung a solitary plaque. I was curious what the plaque said, so I got up to read it. It was from former President Reagan congratulating our unit for outstanding performance. The captain came back into the room, this time with several people behind him. Don and I were introduced to Sergeant Larson, our new supervisor and non-commissioned officer in charge of the mission that we would be working with during our tour at this base. The captain excused himself once again, as Don, my new supervisor, and I talked. We began to discuss our past assignments, who we mutually knew, etc. This small talk went on for about an hour. I was getting anxious to find out more about PPD when Sergeant Larson started our indoctrination to the overall mission that Don and I would be working with. He began the briefing by explaining the onion effect. This was the same concept Captain White had explained to me prior to starting PPD school, only this time Sergeant Larson stopped short of the Gray mission. It dawned on me that he was not going to go any further because he was not part of PPD or, for that matter, anything alien related. He didn't even know the existence of alien programs. It was a great feeling to know something he didn't As he was explaining the classification level of the mission I would be working with and how it related to other missions around the globe, I remember thinking to myself, "Buddy, if you only knew what I know." Of course, just like all things PPD related, I had to keep these types of comments to myself. It was unfortunate because I felt I had such a great nugget of information, knowing aliens existed. Sergeant Larson had just finished our security briefing when Captain Stanley came back into the room. "Sergeant Larson, go ahead and take Sergeant Thomas around the site for a mini tour, and ILL go ahead and take Sergeant Sherman." Don and Sergeant Larson left the conference room. The captain motioned for me to close the door. "This is it," I said to myself. "D-Day has arrived." I had waited for over 7 months, from the time I left school to now, and the time was finally here. "As you probably know by now, Sergeant Sherman," the captain began, "you are here to do more than one job."
"Yes, sir," I replied.
I was so glad to find out more about the actual duties, I was hanging on his every word. "In a moment we'll be going over to your new work center. I want to familiarize you with the computer terminal you'll be working from. It's the same terminal you will be documenting your ICCMs on. Before we do that though, I'd like to mention a few words on security. You do realize you re not to speak of this project to anyone at any time besides me, right?"
"Yes, sir," I replied again.
I knew from what Captain White had told me that I was not to speak to anyone unless I had a third-party introduction. Captain White had told me to speak to Captain Stanley, and I presumed the next person I spoke to about PPD would be introduced to me by one of them and so on.
"Great," the captain went on. "Due to the nature of your regular job here, you will not be able to access the van you'll be working in without being accompanied by another cleared person. This presents a problem when you are documenting your comms, as you will soon see. The van you and a partner will be working in is extremely cramped, therefore any documentation of comms you take down will be susceptible to being seen by your partner. Because of that, we have taken the necessary steps to make sure that does not happen. You'll see what I mean when we tour van. Do you have any questions before we do that?" I knew exactly what he meant, but evidently he didn't know that I knew. He was most likely talking about the blank reporting screen. He was probably unaware that I was taught this in school. But I did have a question. "How am I to know when to start communications with my alien contact?" I asked. "Just for the record, Sergeant Sherman, never say that word. It's referred to as gray. Please get used to not referring to it at all. But if it is unavoidable, the word is grey. In answer to your question though, I have no idea. You re the expert in that area, not me. You are the first ICC that I have ever worked with." This revelation was a bit shocking. "How long have you been in the program, sir?" I asked, hoping I didn't sound too presumptuous or naive. "That is unimportant, but suffice to say that not many people have worked with the actual ICC personnel. I don't know if you know this, but you and the other ICC-capable personnel represent the culmination of 30-some years of wait and see. It's been a long time coming and is very exciting to the people involved. You are part of the first wave of what will be a small but steady stream of ICC-capable and trained personnel. For most of us this is all new territory we re charting, so if it seems like something isn't as organized as you would expect, it's because we re flying blind sometimes. Let's make our way to the van and I'll show you your new computer terminal." We made our way through the operations office and out the double security doors. In order to enter the operations building we were in, you had to enter a code into a cipher lock to get through the first door. A cipher lock is a sequence of numbers you must push, which are printed on a row of numbered levers. After pushing the correct sequence of numbers, the door buzzes telling you that you have approximately 5 seconds to pull the door open. The second door was a 2-foot thick vault door with its own combination lock and a big wheel that required turning like a bank vault door. Turning the wheel would slowly retract the bolts that held the door in place. During normal duty hours this vault door was open. After duty hours, the vault door was secured and alarmed with signs posted saying,
authorized entry only restricted area warning use of deadly force authorized. As we walked to the van where I would be working, I attempted to take in some details of the site. We walked by the shredding room where all the paper waste from the site was shredded with a machine bigger than a car. Every scrap of paper from the site had to be shredded in case something classified had, for example, been written on the margins of a newspaper, or the ink imprint from a classified document somehow transferred inadvertently to an unclassified piece of paper. All trash cans at the end of the day had to be physically dumped out and gone through by a security monitor so that any paper item was separated and thrown in the shred box. One incident that happened to me after I had been there a few weeks effectively demonstrated the tight security measures. I had punched holes in some unclassified paper so that I could place it in a binder. The tray attached to the bottom of the hole punch needed emptying, so I took it out to the trash can located outside the operations door and discarded them there. I came back in and my supervisor immediately asked what had I just done. Recognizing instantly that I had committed a security violation, I told him that I had dumped the little paper circles from the hole puncher in the outside trash. I spent the next 2 hours in one of the outside buildings with the trash can emptied out in front of me with scotch tape wrapped around my hands, sticky part facing out, dabbing at the paper dots until I had retrieved every one of them. When I was finished, I had to get my supervisor to check it to make sure I had retrieved every one, with no exception. This incident would always stay with me and became the biggest lesson I ever learned regarding the importance of adhering to proper security measures. We walked up to the C-van that I would be working in. C-van stood for communication van but was only a military term used to describe this type of van, regardless of whether it would actually be used for communications or not. The site had several C-vans with separate operations and missions. All of them looked like a big metal box. None of them had any wheels, resting on blocks instead. They redesigned to be semi-portable and moved when necessary, but these particular ones were set up for permanent operations. Each van was approximately 15 feet long, 7 feet wide and 8 feet tall. The entrance of the one we were approaching was at one end of the van. There was a lever-like door handle about 12 inches long that was secured by a heavy padlock. The captain explained that the regular mission I would be working with has certain hours and we were entering the van now during non-duty hours, hence the van was locked. We went into a break room located about 50 feet from the C-van and used the phone to call the front security gate to notify the security officer that we would be entering the C-van. In order to gain access to one of the C-vans on site, you had to call the security gate and tell them you wanted access to a particular security zone. After going through an authentication process, you were given authorization to break the security barrier. From that moment, you had 10 minutes to gain access to the C-van. We went back out to the van. The captain opened the padlock by dialing in the proper combination which changed every week as part of the elaborate security measures. He opened the first door and we stepped into a vestibule. He turned and closed the outer door. The inner door could not be opened until the outer door was secured. He quickly opened the inner door and stepped through. I could hear a high-pitched beeping noise. The captain stepped over to where the noise seemed to be coming from and punched a code into a small box hanging on the wall, the face of which was a numerical pad. The LED readout above the numerical pad was flashing a warning that there had been a breach in the security zone corresponding with the zone we had just entered. After he punched a numerical code into the box, it became silent and the LED readout went blank. The van was awfully cramped. There was just enough room for two people because of all the electronic equipment. As you entered the inner door, directly in front of you was a chair that faced a console to the right. To the left side of this chair was another chair also facing to the right towards the console. The console contained some of the same equipment I was already familiar with from my last base and some that was unfamiliar to me. The captain sat in the furthest chair away from the entrance to the van, giving me room to sit in the other seat closest to the door. Along with your normal duties which you will be trained on in time, you will also be documenting your comms here at this terminal.
The captain pointed to the terminal directly in front of me. It was a computer monitor almost as big as the one I used in PPD school. You will be assigned to the organization that sits what we call right seat, and you will have a partner that will sit left seat. In order to access this van, you will always have to have two people, you and your partner. We have a two-person buddy system because of the security requirements. You will learn more about this later. However, this places a constraint on your access to report incomes in private. That is why your reporting terminal will appear to be blank. The captain began to power up the computer terminal, which had been off when we entered the van. With the computer booted up, he proceeded to show me how to access the screen I would be reporting comes through. He clicked the right mouse button and hit the F10 key at the same time. A screen came up with several options, including Staunch 118. I remembered this from school. My instructor told me that it would always show my code name when opening a comms window. The captain told me my password and said, "If for some reason you feel it needs to be changed in the future, let me know and it'll be changed." He typed in the password and a blank screen immediately appeared. It had a black background and the cursor was not visible. It looked exactly like the screen I learned on at school. The screen is black to hide the information you'll be typing from anyone who may be looking on while you type. The captain went on. It's purely a security precaution. As soon as you're done with a comm, simply use the Alt/F10 combination. This will exit you out of the comms window. If the window goes unused for more than 1 minute, you'll have to do the mouse/F10 combination again. You'll be able to continue where you left off at that time. But if you Alt/F10 out of the window, the comm will be sent. So if you start again, it'll be a new comm. I asked where the comms went after I reported them. No answer as usual. I had learned by now that questions such as that one would be ignored because I didn't have a need to know. I knew they were processed by NSA, but I didn't know where and by what organization. Just like many of my other questions surrounding PPD, they would go unanswered. There was one question that was pertinent to my job, so I asked it. Will I only receive comms during my normal duty hours, or will I have to come in during my off-duty hours? The captain replied, "Again, Sergeant Sherman, you're the first IC capable person I have worked with, so I can't answer that question. I can say that you will not be able to get into this van without your crew partner because of the buddy system. So that would tell me that you will be unable to do any comm reporting until your shift starts. I would imagine you'll have to tell them to put it off until your shift. Cross that bridge when you come to it." I thought it was odd that he didn't know as much as I would expect. Every time I talked with Captain White and now Captain Stanley, I got the feeling they didn't know quite what was going on, but they knew enough to get through to me which direction to take next. It was as if someone were telling them things only 5 minutes before I got wind of it. It was quite frustrating because I never really had total confidence in the information I received, but had no other choice because they were my only authority. While we were in the van, I started to ask about all of the other equipment. The captain told me that I would learn about my other job soon enough. His job was to brief me on my PPD duties and to make sure I was clear on how to access my comm window and support my IC mission. All other duties would be trained and supported by the on-site personnel. We backed out of the C-van in the same way we entered, only in reverse, with all the security zones requiring re-establishing. With all this new stuff to learn, I could tell I had some interesting days ahead of me. I started training for my normal duties the very next day. As was typical Air Force style, vast amounts of information were being shoved into my brain in a very short period of time. I was being inundated with knowledge pertaining to my new job and at the same time wondering when I was going to receive my first comm. A week passed without receiving anything. I was beginning to wonder if I had lost my abilities since I hadn't practiced them for almost 9 months. Every time I passed Captain Stanley, he would nod a silent hello or give an audible one, but nothing about PPD and what to expect. I felt very isolated and out of the loop. Of course,
This would be a constant feeling and one that would never leave me as an intuitive communicator.